You are listening to a message brought to you by Christian Life Church Leinster. To find out more about us, go to www.clch.cc.
For those of you whose first time it is today, there's quite a few of you, which is amazing. Thank you so much for coming and joining with our church family today. It's a huge privilege to serve you today with worship and with the words I'm about to share today. We hope that you feel something of the Spirit and of God today, that this isn't just a time filler on a Sunday morning, something to get our tick boxes of meeting with church. This is meaningful. When we spend time with family, when we spend time around others who love Jesus, stuff happens. And I was incredibly encouraged by someone the other day who was, they're preparing for the Sunday here a couple of weeks back. And they said, if I get around to preaching. And the wife was like, well, what do you mean if you get around to preaching? And the husband said, well, you know, stuff happens in Leinster. You never know what's really, how it's going to end up. So I thank God that he moves. And I thank you guys for listening. Because it's not easy at times. There's so much noise. There's so much other stuff that goes on. And, you know, it's no small thing to be part of a church that's full of people who listen, full of people who act and obey what it is that the Spirit is saying at any one time. So, yeah, it's you guys, and it's such a privilege to serve you. So those of us who have been around CLC for a little while, in our main church in Hereford last week, we had all of our sites together. Hereford, Ross, Leinster, Ledbury. We kicked off what we believe is going to be the kind of directing vision for us this year. And that key phrase, this vision for this year, is going to be coming from Matthew 28. So we're going from verse 16. So 28, verse 16, the very last few verses of Matthew. And it says, now the 11 disciples, because of course we lost one along the way, went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. Holy Spirit, as we see these words printed on the page, as we know that these words have been written and inspired by your Spirit, we just ask, Spirit, inspire us in the same way, with the same intent and the same motivation that the author of these words penned them. We ask right now, Jesus, that we don't measure these words against our emotions and our feelings and experience, but we measure them against your truth, that the anchor of these words is your Spirit and your truth, not what we might perceive or understand. Grow our understanding today, Jesus. Amen. So today we're going to be focusing on like the first bit of what happens when people meet Jesus. And of course, Jesus has died and resurrected, which is the most fundamental truth of our faith. Jesus died and he resurrected. If he did not resurrect, all of this is empty. And I mean empty, I'm not saying it's pointless, but it's empty. It's empty of power. It's empty of glory. It's empty of anything, really, than just people getting together and having a good time singing some songs. The reason this is powerful is because the same Spirit that rose Jesus from the dead is the same Spirit that he has now poured out on his people. So this is the bedrock of our faith, this chapter in Matthew, because then what happens is when we then go and see Jesus, what happened to the disciples? They worshipped him. They realized the power that overcomes death is the power that deserves all of us, that deserves our worship, that deserves our everything. So, where are we going to go with this? For those of you who might be making notes, I've just called this preach today just called Worship, Spirit and Truth. So I want to kind of have a quick look at a couple of words before we getting into a bit more detail about worship specifically. So by worship, I don't just mean songs. And I don't think many of us here will kind of close it down into that narrow definition, but I wanted to say that worship isn't just the praise and the worship, in a sense, on a Sunday morning. Worship is the direction that I give sacrifice to things that I deem valuable. So worship is the giving of sacrifice to things that I deem valuable. So, what are we giving? Now, many of us wouldn't kind of say, when we say worship gods or worship idols, we don't exactly have the picture of ourselves going down the temple on a Wednesday morning, offering a sacrifice of incense, saying some kind of funny language, paying a priest and then leaving. That kind of, I think most of us, when we see the words worship or idols, that's what we see or think of. However, worship is anything that we have to give of ourselves to. Now, what do we give, or what do we have that we can give? There's a number of things. And it's no longer just kind of, you know, a sacrifice of a couple of doves or a goat or those kind of things. Our worship today, I think, consists of three things that we all have that we can give. The first one is our time. Second one is our money. And the third is our attention. So worship, I believe, is wherever we give these three things are things that we are worshiping, things that we are giving value to. You can't get time back. Money is a key resource. But attention, especially, I find, comes and goes a lot like this. I find whenever I sit down to maybe start kind of a small prayer session, you know, even if I'm just planning, like, 5 minutes before I go somewhere, I'm going to pray. Within 30 seconds, what have I lost? My attention. I've lost my attention on what I'm meant to be praying for. And especially in the age we're living in, where things happen and change so quickly, our attention is so valuable. And by valuable, I mean companies pay millions to hold your attention for seconds. All of these things like Facebook, Instagram, and even Google, even your emails, you know, I say this, but even kind of going back a few years to, like chain mail, to the adverts that you get through your front door, they've paid money so that you pick it up and that they hold your attention for a split few seconds. People have paid money for your attention. So we can't devalue it however we give our time or attention to certain things. There's been a phrase that's been kicking around over the past few months, which is living rent-free in your head, which is the idea that kind of you can be thinking about something so much that that thing or that person literally lives inside your head. And you're giving them all your time and all your attention and all your effort, rethinking circumstances, situations, things over and over and over again, but nothing is changing. But all your attention is going to that thing. That is what worship looks like. And we might not think of it in terms of like practical things, but in terms of time, money, and attention, that is what I believe today worship looks like, whatever we give those things to. So quick question is, what do I give these things to and why? Because you're always going to be using time. That's never going to stop. And if you find a way to make time stop, please let me know, because I could do an extra hour or five in the day. What do you give your time to? What do you give your money to? What do you give your attention to? Because some of it isn't bad. You know, I'm not here to say every single second of your day has to be in church or around church people. That's not what worship looks like in terms of a Christian sense. But work, of course, takes up a large part of your day. Family would take up a large part of your day. Yeah, and those aren't bad things. God's called us to work. He's made us to work. God's called us to family. He's made us into family. How to better your relationships and your friendships will take your attention. But of course, the question is, what's the point of that? Why are you giving your time, your money, and your attention to those things? And then this is where worship might turn into something called idolatry. Now, as an idea of what this looks like, a few years back, my mortgage came to an end. Not an end, finally. That would be amazing. But a few years too early. Because I had like a four-year mortgage, bearing it, finished. And I had like two sub-accounts, and it was really weird. It was like a kind of a delay of like 6 to 9 months between this one account and this other account kind of, you know, coming to the same point. And I didn't really, despite being a teacher and a maths teacher at best, I didn't really check the paperwork. So I suddenly noticed that our mortgage payments had upped by about £150 a month, just suddenly overnight. I was like, oh, that's a bit more than I was expecting. And what I thought I needed to do was just to basically wait until both of these accounts came to the same time and I could then reapply for the mortgage and do it all again. Until basically I rang up Lloyds Bank, and me and my organization, this wasn't a week after finding out. It wasn't a month after finding out. It was about 6 months after finding out. And they just said, you can do it all online. It's easy. It's literally three button clicks away from having, you know, extra load of money going out. So I had 6 months of £150 going out for absolutely no reason. And when I realized how easy it was to simply redo my mortgage at a much better rate, I was like, that hurt. that cost me and my family something. You know, it wasn't laziness, it was just disorganization. And had I knew how easy it was to have diverted my attention and my time and my money into something better, I would have maybe taken that chance a little bit earlier. Our time, attention, and money are very, very, very similar. You are always going to be spending them. There is no way you cannot get through life without spending one of or all of those three things. So where we put it matters. But when we put it into the wrong things, this is what happens. So when we put it into work, we get something back, don't we? When we put it into our family, we get something back. Or when we put it into our friendships, we get something back. When we put it into serving, we get something back. When we put it into helping people that can never give us something back, and by that I might mean kind of, you know, you offer someone a meal, you know they can't pay you back, you tell them not to pay you back, but you still get something from that. You're able to help someone, give charity, give grace, give mercy. There's still a kind of a transaction that is happening, isn't there? Now, when this turns from worship into idolatry is when the investment that you're giving does not give any return back. That the time, the money, and the attention that you give, basically I think the banking term is like diminishing returns, that they'll come to a point where no matter how much extra time you give, you will get nothing back from that thing. This is particularly the case of the question, what if I did this? If you're trapped in a cycle of thinking about an issue that happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, and you're still giving time and attention to that thing by thinking, what if I changed that? How dare they say this? I can't believe I didn't say that. Then no matter how much time you spend on it, you're not going to get anything back from it. And if anything, it's going to make you bitter. It's going to make you poor in spirit. And it's wasting your time. It's wasting your attention. You're wasting your effort. At which point, when you start spending that much time on something, it has now become not just something that you were giving it to freely as worship, but it's now become an idol. Because, of course, an idol is a dead thing. An idol has no life to it. So when we give our worship to dead things, when we give our worship to things that have no life in them, we get nothing back. And that is what I believe an idol is. And I think there's a key passage in Ezekiel. I think it's like 24 something or other. No. There's a verse in Ezekiel where God says, you set up an idol in your heart, but then you still come to me. When you come to me with your idol in your heart, I will give you exactly what you need to hear. And then he goes on to talk about, like, you know, fire and brimstone, that kind of stuff. So for God, this idea of having an idol in our hearts is a barrier between us and God. But when we think of idols, we often think about kind of, you know, someone who's really not just dedicated, but overly keen, gives everything. They live for that thing. Whereas actually, I think with this idea of time, money, and attention, giving it to things that are dead and getting nothing back from it, we can probably start to see there's a lot more things in our lives that are idols that we've been giving our attention and our worship to. Your job. If you're spending, you know, 45 hours a week in your job and you're doing, you know, what you should be doing, getting it all done, if you start spending an extra hour here, an extra 2 hours there, and then you realize that actually, oh, I'm still not getting it all done, maybe another 5 hours, maybe another 10 hours, and your work starts to expand, but you start to realize that actually you're getting nothing back from it. What started off as an hour or two has suddenly become 15. The first 45 hours were great. You were getting everything back you needed to do. You had your purpose, you had your investment, you had what the work was giving you, you were able to bless people through your work, but the extra time, now it's becoming an idol. And there will be situations in your lives which will be very similar, where there's a right amount of time and money and attention to give to these things. But when we start giving too much with no return, things start becoming an idol. I'm not talking about necessarily like relationships where the other person needs help and support. What I'm talking about is from our perspective, what we're choosing to give our time to really matters. So, as we are created, we were made to live in a relationship to other created things from the Creator. So we are created. I wouldn't say we're creatures, but we are created. And God said when he made Adam and Eve that we are to have dominion over creation, over what he has made, which tells me that as his stewards, as his priests in the world, we, who kind of follow in the same line as Adam and Eve, should have dominion over everything else in our lives, which means that there's nothing in our lives that we should be giving time, money, and attention to unnecessarily. We should be in control of these things, not these things in control of us. And I say this also as someone who is currently going through a coffee fast at the moment. Deep breath. So I honestly did not believe coffee was an idol in my life. This is a really silly example, but so for Christmas, my wife got me some coffee. My Secret Santa got me a kilo of really fancy coffee. I got some coffee syrups. My kids got me little coffee pods. And I think every single present I had received had something to do with coffee. And it wasn't then until Ellie Mae, my 7-year-old, said, "Papa, if we fast things that we do too much of, shouldn't you give up coffee?" And like an arrow to the heart, I was like, shoot, that hurts. So I started it. And I thought it was going to be really easy. But day one, I was hanging. I was just like, oh my days. And I realized it was a comfort thing. It wasn't an energy thing, because actually I've probably got more energy now than I did then. But I realized that I did coffee out of habit. I gave my time, I gave my money, and I gave my attention to thinking about planning to getting a decent coffee. It sounds really subtle, but it's these things that over time become habits of our heart. That might be coffee for you. It might be good clothes for someone else. It might be a beer for another person. It might be always being at your family's beck and call for another person. It might be wanting to make sure that you're preparing well for your kids. It might be wanting to make sure that you're set up ready for retirement. Things that start off well-meaning and good, but suddenly sabotage ourselves, sabotage our thinking and our attention. And just as a little highlight, those of you who have received this book from us already, you'll notice that the first chapter in here is all about worship. I can see a few nods, which is great. You're reading it, which is good. And the phrase that he uses is disordered loves. And what he says is our loves for certain things only are in the right order. Only when they're in the right order do we find ourselves in the right place. Because, of course, our first love and the first thing that we should be directing everything towards should be God. And then everything else should be coming second. But how do you find yourselves when you're trying to work with work, with family, with your likes, with your dislikes, getting through life while still trying to give it all to God? So here's where the worship becomes an issue. Because we feel conflicted. We feel, is this an idol? Is this something that I need to worry about? Am I giving it all to God? And the verse that I think everyone quotes is, I think it's in Colossians, is it, whether you work or something else, do it all for the glory of God. So how do we do that? How do we do everything we do for God? You can't just say, you know, I'm a dad. I can't just leave my family and go and suddenly become a monk for my entire life. That's not being responsible. And the Bible makes it very clear about what happens to dads that do not take responsibility for their family. You're worse than an unbeliever. We have responsibilities. We're told to work. We're told to provide. We're told to have relationship. But we're told to make sure that everything we have goes and gives glory to God, that he has the highest weight in our lives. So the verse that we use in John 4, that we've all seen and heard before, when Jesus is talking to a woman who he shouldn't really be talking to if he was following the rules. And they have a bit of a theological debate. And he turns around. Verse 24, John 4. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. Must. So how do we worship in spirit and in truth? We can't just give it all over to God. We can't just give it up in terms of, you know, put everything else to one side. So how do we? So let's have a look at this. So I'm going to start off with a couple of ideas and then going to kind of 3 points as to finishing it off. So to worship in spirit is to allow our spirit, our soul, our emotions, our heart to be directed to God by his spirit. So to worship in spirit is to be allowing ourselves to be attentive, to listen, and to hear the voice of the Spirit so that we can be directed to God. And to worship in truth means that we are aware and attentive to who and what God is and who and what we are. So there's two things there. There's spirit, which is about being directed to God, and there's truth, which is where we are and where God is. We looked just before Christmas, we looked at what truth is. And truth is this like intersection between what I experience and what really is. And what's crazy about that is God, who is reality, God is everything that is important, and he defines what reality is. He's, because he is God, he is unknowable. We cannot know God. I'm but a man. I have like 3 dimensions of thinking and being and stuff. I also forget things a lot. So I just cannot know God. The only reason we know God is because of Jesus. That's the only reason we know God. So Jesus bridges this gap between where we are, what we experience, what we live, and who God is. And the more we see and worship Jesus, the more we look at him, the bigger that space is in our lives. The more we start to live, not according to what I experience, what I feel, and what I understand and perceive, but we start moving towards this idea of what God sees, who God is, what really is the case. Because, of course, our hearts, as one Reformed pastor said, our hearts are perpetual idol machines. They make idols out of everything. They turn and twist and change everything. The Bible does not view our hearts very well at all. What? There's so many verses, but it's like, what does a man's heart is deceitful. We don't even know our own hearts. And this is us. How do we then describe ourselves to someone else? We need God to work out what I even think. Yeah? Any of you guys have ever had kids? And you ask them kind of what they want. You realize the answer to what they want is very rarely the same as what they need. What they want is lots of sweets, to go and play all day, and to never go to bed. What they need is some decent, hot, home-cooked meals and a decent bedtime. That will make a lot less arguments at home. But what we want and what we need are very different things, what we understand ourselves. So we need truth to give us a firm foundation and an anchor of what that means, not just for us, but for others as well. Because if I don't know myself, how on earth am I going to start having a decent relationship with you guys? This is important. Yeah? So then when we start to worship in spirit, when I say it directs us into God, what I mean is it takes us away from our comfort zone of who I am, what I experience, and what I feel, into what am I reminded about who God is. It removes us from the kind of subjective reality of what we might be living in and moves us into an objective reality of actually what God has purposed, planned, and created your lives to fall into. Yeah? Psalms tell us that all of creation cries God's glory. We are the only creature that gets to choose where we put that glory. We're the only created thing that gets to choose where we direct our time and our money and attention. Everything else cries God's glory. We get to choose, and that is a responsibility that we need to take very carefully. Because even if we choose not to, even if we choose to not direct, and you know, most of your family and friends, I'm guessing, do not direct their time, their money, their attention to God. Yeah? Because what happens at the end of the day is, even if they don't do it now, there's a thing called God's justice, which means that no matter if you direct it to him now or not, at the end of the age, at the end of time, everything will be giving praise to God. And which side of his sword of, you know, his flaming sword of the word of truth we fall on depends on how we live these days, this time now. Are we directing our time, our money, our attention, our resources over to God? So the intention of worship from our view is that the Spirit leads us deeper into truth. So more of our lives are intersected between who God is and who we are. Where we start to live in this sweet spot of not always being comfortable with everything's about me, but realizing it's only ever about me because I've got to give it over to God. So, one little point is truth. By truth, of course, we get it from the Bible, but it's also revealed truth. Jesus says, I think it's in Matthew 11, maybe a little bit earlier, maybe 7, Matthew 10. He says that people only see him because the Son chooses to reveal himself to those people. So if you know Jesus, because Jesus has chosen to reveal himself to you. But no matter how many times we might read these truths in the Bible, no matter how many times we might be repeated up here from a preach, how many times we might read it on in a worship song. If you're like me, I'm very forgetful. And if you ask any man who's ever had a flat pack wardrobe to put up, they need the instructions more than once. They might not want the instructions more than once. They might not even want the instructions at all. But we all know we need the instructions. And it's not just have a quick look, okay, done, dusted, I've read it, done. It's, okay, First step, now do it. Second step, now, oh, poo, I've done step one wrong. Step three, what even is this piece? It's not even here. But that's what life is like. In a sense, we've got, it's not an instruction manual, but we've got truths that direct us into where we should be going. And then we've got to do it. God will not put us onto step 27 before we've done steps 1, 2, 3, and so on, until we put it into practice. There's no point in just repeating steps 1 to 30 in your head and then suddenly going, right, now I can put this together. Let's go. So although we might be repeating these truths time and time again, the Spirit helps us put it into practice by directing our steps, by directing our hands, by directing our conversations at work, by directing the way that we approach difficult, challenging conversations with family and friends, by the way that we spend our money when we're going out to do our weekly shop. You don't need to spend 70, 80, 90 pounds on, I don't know, I can't think of anything that's even close to that amount of money right now. But how you spend your money, what you give your attention to, are you allowing the Spirit to guide you in those things? Have you ever thought, why? Why am I spending this much money on this thing? So, three things that I believe will help us with this. So, they're really easy to remember. Check up. So have a quick check up today at some point or this week. Where is my time, my money, and my attention going? Am I happy with that? Is it being wasted? Am I involving Jesus and the Spirit in how I'm directing that time? So a checkup on your time, your money, and a checkup on your attention. Number two. Oh, no, sorry, on that one. So the challenge that I heard for this one is, if someone looks at your calendar, if someone looks at your bank account, and if someone looked at your phone, would they see Jesus being pointed to? So if I've got a calendar and it's full of just work stuff, when there is opportunities to be involved in things like small group or church or prayer times, if God looked at your day, do you have times in your day where you're giving over to God on purpose? If you look at your bank account, is it all leisure, bills, paying things back that you didn't have enough money for to begin with? Or are there things there that show a heart of generosity? Are there things there that show a service to the church, that show a service and an offering and a sacrifice over to God? Number two, check in. Be intentional about time spent with God. As an evangelical tradition, one of the ways that we've almost kind of gone swing back from this kind of Catholic, everything's set out and ordered, is kind of the other way, where kind of saying, as long as God's in everything I do, it's all okay. I don't have to put time aside. And that is equally as dangerous, because then if nothing is sacred, nothing is sacred. If nothing's set apart as time for God, then we're going to find ourselves loose without an anchor, kind of like floating at sea. So be intentional about times with the Spirit and block your priorities. And for me the other day, this came home when I was putting out the bins. So I was thinking, like, if I was to go for work, I need to put the bins out on a Monday morning. I cannot leave the house on a Monday morning without putting out the bins. If I do forget to put the bins out, I have 2 weeks of having a stinky bin and nowhere to put my rubbish. And I've got to, so I do some awkward stamping down and get angry. So I was thinking, like, why do I not have the same thought about my devotional time with Jesus? Why do I not? I got really convicted then. I was like, I'm very happy to, like, you know, be late to work if I need to do these couple of things that I see as a priority. Yet I will not be late to work because I've done my devotional time. And I wasn't happy with that. Because it's telling me that it's more important to put bins out than it is to get devotional time. Or it's more important to get to work on time than it is to get my devotional time. So if it's a priority, if it's a must, if it's the most important thing that has to happen in your morning to make sure that you are ready to receive and be attentive to the Spirit, then it needs to be. Then everything else gets reordered underneath that thing. So check up, check in. And then last one, because they all start with check. Checkmate. So what do I mean by this? In the same way we started off and Levi said this morning about we're in a battle, we realize that when we are giving and directing our time intentionally over to God, so that we are being pushed into listening and leaning into Him, when we are aware of our lives to an extent where we can kind of move away from what's comfortable into spaces and places that God is moving us, then we'll start to realize that battles that we've been facing for years will start to be won. Enemies that have been at our door for decades will be defeated. Not because you've changed your agenda, your schedule, but because you've directed your time and your money and your attention to the right things. Which means when you come to sit down to pray, instead of your mind drifting off to something else at work or your mind drifting off to something else that happened with whatever else, your mind is able to focus on speaking truth against the enemy. Your mind is able to focus on speaking truth to your own heart and reminding yourself of what God has promised and planned for your life. And as we do this more and more and more, we are no longer underneath the enemy's plans to steal, to kill, and destroy. But we'll find ourselves with the enemy, as it says in Genesis, where our heels will crush the serpent's head. Because the power of Jesus lives in us, lives through us. So where you direct your time, where you direct your money, where you direct your attention to matters to defeat your battles, to win your battles. I can't speak into every single one of your lives and tell you what exactly that is. That's the Spirit's job. But I'd also encourage you to ask those who are close to you, do you see Jesus in my life? Is it obvious? Would your friends or your work colleagues or people who you kind of know, would they be surprised if they knew you were Christian? And especially as we start moving towards this idea of go and make disciples, we need to be ready to be directed by the Spirit at the drop of a hat at any point in the day. But if we're not listening, if we're not attentive, if we're not able to get our wallets out, if we're not able to block out some time or move things around, we might miss the opportunities that Jesus has put before us. So check up, check in, checkmate. Are we ready to see the battles won this year? Do we want to? Are we prepared to put in the sacrifice that that's going to take? Are we ready to worship Jesus in spirit and in truth? So Holy Spirit, right now, we say, lead us into all truth. Lead us away from just thinking about ourselves and remind us again of the plans and the purposes that you have for us. I thank you that you work all things together for the good of those who love you, Jesus, which means we have nothing to fear. If we give our money over to you, we will not lack. If we give our time over to you, we will not be found wanting. If we give our attention to you, we will not be any less off, any worse off. Help us to live ordered lives with an ordered love with you at the top, Jesus. That everything else in our life finds its right position and priority underneath you, Jesus. Help us to live a life of intent, where what we do isn't just for leisure, isn't just for fun, isn't just to get money, isn't whatever else, but it's all lived through the lens of giving you glory, Jesus. We love you and we thank you. Amen.